Hello, this is Leslie Garfield-Tenzer, and this is Law to Fact. Today I'm speaking with Mike Cohen about the serendipitous path out of law school that can come following graduation. In this episode, Mike Cohen shares his own journey out of law. He begins with a fateful phone call that took him out of the litigation practice he spent 3 years preparing for and into real estate, a practice area he knew nothing about but ending up being his ideal. Mike has the benefit of perspective and shares with us his firsthand understanding that one's first job out of law school is likely to look nothing like the job you hold down the road. Full disclosure, Mike was my classmate and was and still is one of my best friends from law school. He happens to be one of the funniest guys I know. But the real reason I wanted to have him in the podcast is because he can best dispel a myth that seems to plague so many of my first-year law students, which is that the first job you take will not be the last job you have. If you're listening to Law to Fact, chances are at some point you'll be taking the bar exam. Well, getting ready for the bar exam means you'll need to choose the study program that's right for you. Kaplan Bar Review will get you ready to take on test day with confidence by offering $100 off live and on-demand bar review with offer code Leslie100. Visit www.kaplanbarreview.com today to sign up. Here's my discussion with Mike Cohen. So welcome. I'm so happy to have you here as my guest. And a lot of my students come to law school and they think they want to be a lawyer, or maybe they want to be in business, or a lot of lawyers go to law school thinking they want to be a lawyer and they end up in business. So I thought it'd be really fun and interesting to talk to you, my law school colleague, about career trajectory. And we're going to get right to the beginning, because I remember what happened that last day when you were moving out. I was sad to see you go because you really were one of my closest friends in law school.
Thank you.
And you were set to work at Troutman Sanders. So tell us the story of kind of what happened then.
Okay. Accepted a job in a litigation department at Troutman Sanders, which was a large, now it's an international law firm based in Atlanta, because I thought Troutman Sanders had probably pound for pound the best real litigation department in Atlanta, if not the Southeast, and a tremendous client roster. And I kind of viewed myself coming out of law school as, you know, being the next Clarence Darrow, as naive as that was. And I kind of, to use your word, trajectory, I kind of did a trajectory in law school to do moot court and be a captain of the moot court team, and thinking I was going to go into litigation, not even really understanding what that meant. So accepted the job, graduated. We're all leaving Gainesville. In my case, my two roommates had already moved out of town. And we're giving up our apartment. All the furniture was gone on a truck that Troutman Sanders was paying for to move my stuff to Atlanta. The electricity was off. The only thing that worked in the apartment back then, and it's hard for people today to realize this because it was a different world. There were no cell phones or computers. The phone on the wall with the plug-in cord still worked, even if you didn't have electricity. And the reason I know that was because after we turned the electricity off, the phone rang. It was literally as I was walking out the door of this empty apartment. And I answered it. I thought, do I answer it or not? And I thought, maybe it's one of my roommates calling to, they'd forgotten something. So I answered the phone, never expecting that it was Troutman Sanders on the line. One of the partners at Troutman Sanders saying, I have good news for you and bad news for you. Which would you like first? And I said, well, let's give me the bad news. And he said, Some person who had been a summer clerk the year before me and then had done a clerkship for a federal judge had accepted a litigation position that was still open, and which displaced me and put me into the real estate department. How do you feel about that? And so it's a little bit shocking. And I said, well, my stuff's on a moving van that you're paying for. Already on its way to Atlanta. I've signed a lease for the next 12 months to live in an apartment in Atlanta. But I can tell you the most boring class that I could ever imagine taking in law school was property, but I don't think I have a choice. So what's the good news? And he said, well, we're really looking forward to seeing you. And I kind of didn't necessarily take that as good news at the time. But I got in my car and drove to Atlanta because there was really nothing else for me to do. And that's literally how my career in real estate started. It was entirely the result of an unintended consequence of somebody else's action.
Right. And let's say a positive one, because you ended up with a quite impressive career. So
thank you. It was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, frankly. Right. I didn't know it at the time. I didn't think it at the time, but you know, one of the things I wanted to talk about today was, and it's, I think it's particularly true in the traditional fields, you know, law, accounting, real estate, financial, insurance, that people, I think young professionals in these fields think there's really only one track to get on, and you get on the track and you go through your career and don't always see parallel tracks that may not stay parallel for very long, and get so tunnel vision focused on that next career step that sometimes there are opportunities that you don't think are possible. And in my case, I got on a different track totally against my will in a lot of ways. Right. But what it ended up being was the best thing that ever happened to me, because I think most of the litigators who I would have started with otherwise all those years ago were decades before they ever even got into a court. And my career went a whole different direction because some other guy accepted a position coming out of a clerkship who I didn't even know. I never even heard the name before.
Mm-hmm. It's so interesting because actually an applicant of law schools called me yesterday, and she was deciding which law school to go to. And in deciding, she wants to do public interest law. So she wants to go to this. She has a choice between a very good school and a school that's not, although I hate U.S. News rankings, but a school that's not as nationally recognized but has a good public interest. And I said, you can go into school for public interest, but you may not come out of school for public interest. And so your story kind of supports the idea that when you come out of law school, you are a lawyer, but you may not want to be the kind of lawyer that you were when you entered law school.
I think, well, that's certainly true for me. And then what ended up being subsequently true was after I got out of law school and then moved into the real estate department, very quickly, it was apparent to me that not only did I not want to be a litigator, but I didn't want to practice law for a long time. And which is not to say I have any regrets having gone to law school. I think it's a great discipline, particularly for real estate, and we can explore that further. But I was not happiest in the law school environment. But that doesn't mean I don't use the disciplines I learned every day and the thought process and the structured thinking as part of my career every day, because I did. And so I think it's really hard when you're early in your career and you're trying to figure out where to go and everything's coming at you so fast. It's really hard to take a breath and say, let me understand the whole big picture here. Let me see the full bandwidth of opportunities and make choices based on that. Because I think it's harder for young people to do it. And I also think, at least my recollection, you can validate or invalidate that law schools and business schools and medical schools are steeped in the business of creating lawyers and doctors and business people, and don't always give the full breadth of the opportunity picture either to their potential client base.
But I think about a lot of the people that we went to law school with. One is career services at Brooklyn Law School. One is a works at Pepsi in their corporate department. I mean, how many people actually end up in the same place a few decades after they leave law school?
Probably very few. But I think there's several reasons for it. I think part of it is because I think for a certain amount of folks, they're just the law firm environment just in the right environment for them. Mm-hmm. And so I think they make changes, which is what I did. For others, I think the whole concept of being an in-house counsel with a company or a financial firm is very different than it was when we got out of law school. I think those were not at that point in time. Can we say the year? Do you want me to say the year? Instead of saying the year, how about if we just said it was during the Reagan administration?
Right. I like that better. That gives me a little more time. Yeah.
During the Reagan administration. I won't say whether it was his first or second term. But I think, I don't think companies had the depth of in-house legal staffs that they do today. So I think the whole purpose of an in-house counsel and an in-house legal team has exploded over the past 30 years. So that wasn't even really a viable career path when we were getting out of law school. Mm-hmm. There were very few in-house positions, and very people took them because usually it was a step down in a lot of ways. And so that I think that whole path has changed. I think this is a long answer to a short question, which was give me a number on that or a percent. But I'll tell you this, that, you know, the when I left private practice to go in-house with a development company, it was the only pay cut I ever took. It was the only job change I ever had that I really did think I was taking a step down in substance. I went from doing highly complicated real estate transactions for developers and investors around the country to working for a very prominent development company, but I was negotiating shop leases. So I went from negotiating structured joint ventures to negotiating a lease with the dry cleaners. Basically. But I did it strategically. Probably the most strategic career decision I've ever made, since I was thrust into real estate without wanting to be there. Everything else that followed my departure from private practice kind of flowed a little more naturally. But I made a very clear decision in 1990 when I left private practice.
I want to point out that even though we're not talking years, that it was really you were pretty much only practiced law for 5 years.
I practiced for just under 5 years. Okay. The partnership track was, I think, 7 then. Okay. I don't know what it is today. It's probably a little longer, I would guess. And there's equity and non-equity partners, so that piece has changed. The situation I was in, I practiced for 5 years. I didn't want to be a partner. Honestly, I never had a goal. You know, there's some people you show up at work with, and their goal is to be a partner at a law firm. That's their goal. Right. They say it day one, and they're going to be all in on that. That was never me. I never wanted to be a partner at a big law firm. I didn't want to be a partner at a small law firm, but that was never my goal.
So you made this strategic decision.
So I made a strategic decision to leave for a real estate company, took a huge pay cut, and took a huge step back in substance of what I was doing, going from structuring complicated joint ventures and financings, literally to like doing leases with yogurt shops and dry cleaners and nail salons, because I wanted it. It was 1990, the economy was about to turn, and I kind of felt like I was looking at a cliff saying, if I don't go now, anytime the economy turns, real estate's hit, whether the downturn has any relation to real estate at all, real estate always gets whacked in a downturn, and probably disproportionately. So I was looking at a situation where if the economy turned, it probably wasn't going to recover significantly. Hiring always lags. It wasn't going to recover until after kind of my partnership date at Troutman Sanders. Nothing against Troutman Sanders. I still have a lot of friends there. This isn't personal. But I knew that had I stayed for that, and they made it reasonably clear to me that if I was on the track, whether I wanted to be or not, I was. But I knew if I stayed kind of past that partnership date, the handcuffs would get set on, and the likelihood of me leaving or somebody hiring a partner from a law firm kind of at an entry level real estate type position wasn't going to happen. It just wasn't going to happen. So I took the jump before I felt like the economy was going off a cliff, and that's what the jump was. It ended up being with a retail development company, a bunch of great guys, people I worked with at other companies off and on for almost 2 decades. And it was the best thing I ever did, but it was also kind of this scary pay cut as the economy was turning with a developer who would not be viewed as overly liquid, to use a today term. Back then, I remember we my first year there, there's no voicemail, there was no technology. We were on a Christmas trip and holiday trip, and I came home. I was at the airport, and I had to call the office from the payphone at the airport, and nobody answered. And I looked at my wife, and I said, maybe we've shut down. And I kind of jokingly said that. And then I went home, dumped my suitcase, and went to the office, and half the company had been fired.
Oh, wow.
In a Christmas bloodletting. And fortunately I had survived, but I mean, it was not, you know, nobody would look at that decision at the time and say, that looks like a particularly stable decision, because there were a lot of reasons not to do it. Mm-hmm. But it put me in an environment that I knew would take my career, put it on a different path,
right,
and get me headed in a direction that I wanted to be headed in, rather than being on a partner track at a law firm and then having handcuffs shackle me to a timesheet for a long time.
And the point, I mean, there's a couple morals to that story, but the most important moral, I think, particularly for law students, is that your first job isn't your last job, and that your first job is just a first job, and that if you don't like it, you have options to do other things. I think that a lot of students worry about that first job. Now, having said that, on the other hand, your first job can very much kind of throw you into a particular practice of law. So your first job threw you into real estate, which turned out to be a good thing. But I think students see that first job as their last job, or maybe not as much now because kind of the culture of job stability or staying somewhere has changed, but it's an arc, and it travels and it waves back and forth. And I think that's a really important moral for students to recognize, is that you're not going to be married to that first job.
No, I think that's one of those kind of falls under the category of things you're not told when you're kind of trying to figure out your career. I have a daughter who graduated college 2 years ago. What I would tell her for a long time was, all this you're doing, all the college and studying, that's just to get your first job. Right. Once you get your first job, nobody really, if you perform and do well and excel, nobody cares where you went to school. Nobody cares what your grades were. So this entire package of time in your life is really wrapped up to get that first job. And then once you get there, you're going to succeed or fail based on how you do there, not how you did on some, chemistry test 10 years ago. And I think a lot of people kind of lose sight of that.
And that will be true for law students too. I mean, maybe, I don't know, maybe the top firms still want that pedigree, but after your first job, nobody looks at your grades, right?
No. And I don't even know, not only do they not look at your grades, I'm not even sure they really even look at where you went to school. They look at what you did. I remember when the headhunter who placed me out of private practice asked me, as part of the prepackaged questioning, that what's your goal in life? And I remember I said to her, and it's kind of funny, it's turned out to be true, I told her, and this was 1990, I said, after I leave private practice, I don't ever want to have to put another resume together again for the rest of my professional career. I want my resume to be the book of work that I do. And so, here we are, more time later than I want to admit, 3 decades later, and my resume is the companies I've worked with, because I've had the good fortune of working for some great companies over the years, and for some really great mentors in real estate. And we come back to the whole concept of mentors and career separately if you want to, but also now I can point to 50 projects in the world and that have physical elements and pictures and videos and say that's my resume. I remember when I'm gonna tell a Gator story, since I know you're a
Go Gators.
You're a double Gator. Yeah. I think it was when Florida hired Urban Meyer back in the early 2000s. Steve Spurrier was interested in coming back to Florida, and the then president of the school asked him for a resume. And this story on the street was Spurrier just looked at him and said, "My resume is in your trophy case." And I don't have Spurrier's resume. I'm not making an analogy there, but what I'm saying is my resume is on the street. It's at the corner of X Street and Y Street. And
right.
Center, where it's an office building somewhere else, and that becomes your resume, not what grades you had and what classes you took and did you win the book award or anything like that.
Right.
So I think that's
helpful. That's helpful. That's good. I want to talk about mentors and I want to talk about careers. Here's the career question I have that I get from students all the time. Student comes to school and they want to do a JD MBA or a JD real estate degree or something like that. And my understanding is you should pick a lane to begin with, because when you graduate, the MBA people think you want to be a lawyer and the lawyer people think you want to be an MBA. Now, I am not out in practice, so I don't know if I'm right. Can you comment on that?
I think that may have been more true at one point in time. It just seems like lanes are getting blurred a little more. I think companies are getting used to people being portable and mobile, and maybe it's harder to get your first job now because companies feel like hire someone who's got a little bit of experience, because the last place I want to be is to train somebody and have them leave. That's a very expensive, money losing process for a company. But I can't speak specifically to that. I will tell you that I considered a JD MBA coming out of school, and I considered an LLM in tax, as you know. But I decided against the MBA piece because I had an undergraduate business degree, and I didn't think it would be that accretive to just my overall resume. What I wish I had done differently was not the JD PhD part, but I wish for the undergrad part that I had a business degree in finance and not accounting.
Would you recommend to students that they get a JD MBA or a JD real estate, or would you recommend to students that they get one professional degree and then let their career experience kind of move them through?
What I would tell students is, and what I do tell students is, you know, you don't need to envision 30 years of your career today, mm-hmm. but at least try and envision 5 or 7, and don't get so focused on years 1 through 3. Think about where you may want to go, steps 2 and steps 3, and then work that backwards and say which of these degrees might be additive to that. If you want to get into real estate or some financial field, you don't need an MBA in marketing. You may or may not need or want a JD, but I think if you want to get into real estate, there's a ton of, one of the great things about real estate is there's just a ton of entry points. Mm-hmm. But finance is what makes real estate go. So if you can pick one degree to get into real estate, kind of a little bit off topic, I'd say it's finance.
Okay.
But that's not the only degree. You can get into real estate from law. You can get in from leasing, get in from construction, from development, from finance. There's a thousand entry points into real estate, which is one of the great things about the field and one of the things I benefited from because I got in from a little less traditional route, which was law. But beyond that, I'm probably not qualified to recommend which path is the best.
All right. But that was helpful. Tell me about mentors, because on this podcast, we really don't talk about mentors that much, and they're so important. So what's your advice to students about securing a mentor, how to secure a mentor? I don't know. What are your thoughts on mentoring?
I think mentoring is very important. I actually spend a lot of time mentoring students, both in my role as being on the advisory board at the School of Business at Florida and at Georgia State, and from just being around town in Atlanta for a long time. I think they're hugely important. I think you should have several mentors, and they possibly rotate in and out along the way as your career ebbs and flows. And I also think there's a tendency to want mentors who you view are as perfect and role models. And I've had a number of mentors along the way, who I'll leave nameless, who've had their struggles, who've made some mistakes in life personally and professionally and are able to talk about them. And I always felt like the person who was able to admit he was an imperfect person, but a good at his discipline was the best mentor. And I still have a couple of mentors, even at my age, who are 10 and 12 years older than I am, who I pick up the phone and call occasionally and say, what do you think about this situation? Or what do you think about this set of facts? And listen, and invariably they'll have some experience, and it may have been 30 years ago, but it's directly on point. I think mentors are invaluable.
Well, you know, but it's interesting because we talk about a mentor, but you're right. You should have a few mentors and call on the different mentors for the different matters. Yeah, that's great advice, actually. That's wonderful advice.
Mentors whose strengths are by design somewhat different than yours.
And how did you go about securing your mentors? How'd you get them?
Yeah, it kind of happened holistically. I mean, I people in the industry who I felt comfortable with, who seemed to want to take me under their wing. I was on a service board here for a number of years. You know, I think we talked about earlier, there's always some unintended consequences. I was on the board of the Center for Visually Impaired, and my mother had visual issues. So I thought, let me give back to the community that way and kind of honor her after her death. And I was on the phone one day with a person who ultimately became my mentor. And I said, you know anything about this service organization? He's a real estate guy in town. He said, yeah, I'm the chairman of the board there. It's totally one day. I said, really? I want to talk to you about it. He goes, you want to be on the board? And I said, sure. And that's how I got on the board. And then he ultimately became a kind of a professional and personal mentor. So I think it's always best for them to happen holistically, people you're comfortable with. I think you need, when you have someone in that role, it's a little bit like a professional therapist or a life coach. I mean, those are kind of all fall in the same bucket. And it needs to be honesty and transparency in order for it to be effective. And so I think it needs to be someone you're comfortable with first, and not someone you just pick out of a directory and say, I want you to be my mentor.
Right. And ask, right? You should put yourself out there
and ask.
Do you say, can you mentor me? Or do you just kind of go to them for questions and
I never outright asked, but I did after the relationship was better established for the several of them. There have been three or four along the way. I've kind of circled back and said, you've been an invaluable mentor to me. Mm-hmm. And none of them ever deny that it was a mentorship. It just kind of happened.
So is there anything else you want to add to our students vis-a-vis career, arc of a career?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. You know, I think first is be bold. There are no set paths. The only, you know, you have a set path if you end up with a fellowship in anesthesiology, you're going to be an anesthesiologist, and that's kind of a set path. There are some careers for which there are set paths, but I think going to law school doesn't have to lock you into that set path. So be bold, be willing to lift your head up and look around and challenge yourself as to what interests you and what doesn't interest you. For me, on the practice of law, it was two things. One, when I got to a law firm, and I don't know why it didn't hit me. It doesn't say much about my intelligence. I don't know why it didn't hit me beforehand, but I kind of got to the law firm after you go through the whole summer program where you're treated like royalty, and then you show up for work. Yeah, I don't know how summer programs are today. It was a summer camp when we were getting out of law school, but then you show up for work, and I took a step back and I thought, well, over the course of a career, there's one promotion and it either happens or doesn't in year 7 or 8. And I looked around the office and I thought, hey, even these guys who kind of made it have they're just keeping time the same way. And so it never was a path that I wanted to be on. So don't lock yourself in. Don't be afraid to challenge yourself and look for other things, and to admit that, you know, there's an environment component to it, whether you like working somewhere, you like the people you work with, and there's the substantive component to it. And so for me, my goal became, how do I use the degree and the thought processes and the skills it's given me in a different environment? And then so that I noticed that early on. And then about 3 years in, when I started to work on files by myself and real estate deals by myself, I had a pretty liberal mentor at Troutman Sanders who gave me enough room to hang myself if I was inclined to do that. I remember sitting in meetings and you're with, you know, back then a lot of stuff was done in person. There was limited technology. So you'd get in a room and you'd negotiate, and you and the other lawyer would just really beat the crap out of each other for hours. Mm-hmm. Say, no, you can't have 3 days notice before you pay your rent. You're in default. I need 5 days notice. And you kind of find yourself saying, do the 2 days really matter? It's $100 million building. I'm not sure why 2 days matter, but you know, the form says 3 days, so I'm going to fight for it. And you end up beating each other up. Not that there's not more serious issues in a negotiation, but the clients would sit at the end of the table and they would, every once in a while, you look to them and they kind of give you a nod their head one way or the other. And at the end of the day, you'd be exhausted and the two clients would go out for a beer and enjoy each other's company. And I thought to myself, there's something about the nature of this relationship on their side that goes way beyond what's in these documents. It's a historical relationship where there's trust, and not that every deal goes well and on both sides of every deal like each other, but there's this whole relationship that happens before it gets to the law office. And I wanted to be part of that.
Oh, interesting.
I was better suited to be part of that than I was to be in the office negotiating documents, which is what the job was. So I that's what kind of propelled me. And my advice to students and also to young lawyers, to the extent many young lawyers listening, keep your head up. You're not wed to a path. You're not wed to a discipline. I was an accountant who was supposed to be a litigator who ended up in real estate, who's now got his own company. And if you kind of look through the 30-year look back, and you go, was this the guy who's going to be an entrepreneur? He's got an accounting degree. He's driven by safety and security, and taken the safe path. And you'd never have predicted the path that got me to where I got from where I started. And I don't want others. I don't like when other students kind of lock themselves into that. So that's what mentors are for. That's what vacations are for, to stop and think. That's what nights and weekends are for, to think about what you're doing, where you want to go. Are you really enjoying it? Don't just get into the pool and start flailing and dog paddling for 5 years thinking that there's a goal you want to get to, and get there and have it not be what you really wanted it to be.
Great advice. And, you know, as you're speaking, I'm thinking this, the reality, well, as you're speaking, this is what I'm thinking about. that you never said, I picked a career and so now I'm stuck with it. That you said, I picked a career, it's not suiting who I am right now, let me figure out the next step. And I think that we have to constantly reinvent ourselves. And I would not have predicted that you would. I always knew you were going to be successful, but I would not predict that.
Yeah, thank you.
I would have predicted you would have, you know.
I'll leave off the air the things I would have predicted for you, but I'm kidding. You would have been right. I mean,
by the way, like, would you have ever predicted that I would be a law professor?
Not completely, but I remember when we were in law school. I think we were in law school. You wrote an article on exit polling.
Right. That's right.
That's right. I remember that. And I remember
it was published.
I don't know why, I just now thought it got published, but somewhere, I can't remember where, but I remember how excited you were.
I was.
To pursue that and how much passion you had for it. And you know, if we thought in those terms back then, it would have occurred to me that practicing in an institutional setting for traditional clients was not your highest and best use, that you had a passion for knowledge and for learning and then for explaining what you've learned to other people.
Well, thank you. And you know, actually, when I tell people, when people ask me, why am I a professor, I credit that law review article. Do you remember that law review article got me to be a legal writing professor at Pace, which got me to be on the tenure track. And, And it really did. It really did. So,
well, and I don't know how much time we have left, but I think if you take your law review article and my phone call for Troutman Sanders and you look at them independently at the time they happened, you would say meaningful events in our lives, certainly, but not epiphanies as they were happening. And you look back 30 years later and you realize they've redirected two careers in a very positive way. So I think the message for students would be don't obsess over what appear to be small events, but don't forget them along the way and kind of make note of them and kind of look back and ask yourselves over the years from time to time, which of these events really impacted my life versus which of the ones that I thought would impact my life and were really just kind of non-events in hindsight.
Perfect words to end on. This has been such a pleasure. And thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome.
So that's my discussion with Mike Cohn. You can connect with Mike through LinkedIn. So that's our episode this week. Once again, a reminder that Kaplan Bar Review is offering you $100 off their live and on-demand bar review program. Just use Leslie100 as your code when you sign on at www.kaplanbarreview.com. And one thing you could do for us, like us, subscribe us, rate us on any platform on which you listen to us. It really makes a difference for us. And you can always reach us at lawtofact@gmail.com or tweet us at lawtofact. Thanks as always to www.bensound.com for the music, and enjoy your day.